Our next case is 10-1946, Amber Williams versus Frederick Ormsby. Mr. Larrabee.
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court. My name is Michael Larrabee, and I represent the appellant Frederick Ormsby in this matter. For more than a century, Ohio has refused to recognize love and affection as consideration for a contract. In overturning the trial court's decision in this case, the Ninth District carved out an exception to that well-settled law, holding that moving into a home with another and resuming a relationship can constitute consideration sufficient to support a contract. In this case, the trial court correctly determined that the March 2005 agreement was a valid contract supported by mutual consideration.
Counsel, what's the difference between a contract and a gift?
Well, a contract.
And was this not possibly just a gift?
Well, if it was a gift, Your Honor, it would be not in the record that way. It was not set up as a gift. It was written as a contract between the parties. There was a March contract, and then there would be a June contract. Our position is that the June agreement or the June document did not have the sufficient consideration to change the terms of the March contract.
What's it take to make a gift?
I'm sorry?
What's it take to make a gift?
It takes the intent to give it away and not to have the property come back.
Was it given away?
In this case, the evidence was that the appellant, Mr. Ormsby, did pay down the mortgage by $310,000 in anticipation of marriage. It was not intended to be a gift. The evidence does not bear out that it was intended to be a gift to Mr.
Ormsby. But it was deeded to him, was it not?
It was deeded to him, correct.
So
it was consideration
he,
for
he
that.
He had it, and then...
That's correct, Your Honor.
It was, in fact, a gift. You'd have to have a donative intent, and then you'd have to have delivery of that intent, but there was no deed ever delivered to Ms. Williams.
No, Your Honor, there was not. There was not. The deed was, the property was quitclaimed to Mr. Ormsby in December of 2004.
That's correct. And there was a document written, which is at issue here, as to what is or isn't consideration for a proposed contract.
That is correct, Your Honor.
There was no deed ever delivered.
No, there was not, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Counsel, what is the difference between the two contracts here in terms of actual dollar amounts? I assume we're contesting the actual dollars involved here. So what are we talking about?
The first contract, the March 2005 contract, stated that the property would be sold and that Mr. Ormsby would receive back the entire amount that he paid into the house, plus some monies that he paid towards real estate taxes, as well as mortgage payments. Then the June agreement of 2005 stated that they were equal parties in the property, that the property, if their relationship would be terminated, that they would split the proceeds of the house.
So is it about $150,000 difference?
$162,000 there for love and affection, Your Honor. No Ohio case law supports the idea that a romantic relationship can serve as valid consideration for a contract. To the contrary, this court held in Flanders in 1887 that the agreement based on consideration of love and affection is not enforceable. The restatement of contract states that the consideration of love and affection is legally insufficient. Corbin on contract states a written gratuitous promise is not a contract. The Ninth District in this matter ignores this well-established line of law, and it tries to distinguish its own case of Carlisle. Then it misapplies this court case, this court's case in Snyder, and then it looks to case law outside the state of Ohio, to Oregon in the Ticklebag case, and Rocamonte, the New Jersey case, which is a New Jersey palimony case, to support its conclusion. And it reaches a troubling result, Your Honors, that the Ninth District inserts palimony facts with a misreading of the Snyder case to conclude that a relationship can serve as valid consideration for a contract. It's clear that the Ninth District misquoted Snyder in its opinion, and it wrote at paragraph 19, that a contract to make a will requires more than ordinary services susceptible to valuation. Instead, services must be a kind rendered as a result of sacrifice because of love and affection. What Snyder actually held was that a contract to make a will, which includes land, must be in writing to satisfy the statute of frauds, and equity will not allow specific performance unless the services were not intended to be and are not susceptible to being measured by monetary value.
In this case, we really are not talking about any sort of promise or contract for marriage, are we? Because he was already married and he could not promise marriage to her? We're talking more about just the love and affection part.
The love and affection, but the I believe both contracts make reference to the fact that they were engaged and they were going to be married. That's correct.
That was apparently dependent on some sort of divorce being finalized?
The divorce had to be finalized. That's correct, Your Honor. There's nothing in the Snyder case that states that a relationship may serve as consideration for a contract. Snyder has little to do with personal relations, but rather personal services. And the Ninth District team tries to confuse these issues, personal relations versus personal services. In Snyder, we're talking about housekeeping, cooking, canning, laundry, secretarial work, business errands, driving, and medical care. Then the Ninth District adopts language from the Palimony case of Racamonte to say what a relationship is. It states undertaking a way of life entailing companionship, fulfilling each other's needs, emotional, physical, and social, foregoing other liaisons and opportunities. The Ninth District assumes by resuming a relationship, Ms. Williams agreed to these things, and then it misapplies Snyder, saying that that would constitute a consideration for the June 2005 document.
Counsel, assume for a moment that love and affection does constitute consideration. How long did this relationship go on after this agreement was adopted, and would we have a failure of consideration since it obviously didn't continue?
That would be a question for the trial court. If this court was to determine there was consideration for that, then I guess the trial court would determine whether there was, in fact, consideration. By the relationship failing, is it enforceable? Can she enforce that June 2005 agreement?
Do you know how long did the relationship go on after the June contract? If you recall.
As I recall, it was approximately 1.5 years, but it was tumultuous where the parties were in and out of the house. I think Mr. Ormsby left the house in 2008.
And if we consider love and affection as appropriate consideration, does that put the trier of fact in the position of determining the substance of the love and affection? I mean,
that's a good point, Your Honor, because if we're going to get to that point, that issue, we have to decide whether how do you enforce the agreement? Do you say that there's specific performance? Do you say that you have to love and take care of that person? The question is one day enough? Is resuming the relationship one day, is that enough for $162,000? What if her love wasn't that great? What if they didn't get along that well? And in this case, they didn't, and they ended up breaking up. It takes into an issue, how do you measure damages? How do you measure how long the relationship was in effect? Plus, the Ninth District does not do a good job at defining what relationship means. It doesn't specify what type of relationship would qualify. There's many.
So, is there any point at which, I'm coming at this slightly different direction than Justice Brown, at which the agreement here would have become binding?
Perhaps if she would have paid monetary value to him, something more, because we have a...
So this was always smoke and mirrors then.
Exactly. It was love and affection in the record. She gave him her love. They were going forward with a relationship. And again, the type of relationship, it could be an employer-employee relationship, teacher-student, attorney-client.
But the March 2005 contract had specific duties on the appellee in this case that the June contract did not.
Absolutely. They were to share in maintenance of the home. She absolutely had the right to live in the home in the March contract. And one of the things that the Ninth District brings up is that by moving back to the house, that was consideration. Well, she already had the right to live there by the March contract. You can't bargain for what you already have. So how can that serve as consideration?
So, counsel, if she, you mentioned money, but if she had a specified list of things that she had promised to do, that she had no obligation to do, you know, cooking the meals, cleaning the house twice a week, I mean, things that were measurable, that could, to answer Justice Pfeiffer's question, couldn't that serve as the corresponding promise that could be the consideration? Love and affection, we understand your point is very amorphous. How do you measure it? But if you had a list of duties taken on for the return promise, that could function as consideration, couldn't it?
Perhaps, Your Honor, but the concern is that we're getting awfully close to palimony at that point. Mm-hmm. Palimony is not a recognized cause of action in the state of Ohio by statute or common law. And Ohio law does not permit the division of assets or property based on cohabitation. Amatory causes of actions were abolished in 1978. Common law marriages were prohibited after 1991. So I believe we're, by acknowledging housework, cleaning work in a romantic relationship, you're getting awfully close to that palimony type case of Bracamonte and New Jersey. Which
so you're saying the set of promises in return had to be money?
Well, no, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying if it's solely house cleaning as a part of a romantic relationship, I think you're getting close to a palimony type situation. Here, there was nothing more than her love and affection.
Did you draw the contract June? It was a novation in June, was it not?
It was an attempted novation in June. It was a failed novation.
Did you draw that for your client?
I'm glad to say, no, I did not, Your Honor.
Thank God.
Thank you. Your Honor, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Mr. Jones.
Good morning, judges of the Supreme Court. I'm Ray Jones. I'm on behalf of Amber Williams. People make mistakes constantly in relationships. I don't think that ever has changed in human life since Adam and Eve. And Mr. Ormsby has made a mistake in that he put down in writing and relieve this case from the statute of frauds. I think if you take a look at the precedent that you've got in this case, which is going to be Snyder versus Ward, 150, one Ohio State.
Could you speak up, Mr. Jones?
I'm
having
sorry.
Trouble hearing you.
Sorry, Judge. Again, I think there's ample precedent for this in previous decisions by the Ohio Supreme Court, and that would be the Snyder versus Ward case. That particular case, I think if you read the case all the way through, you certainly get the impression that the Ohio Supreme Court would have, in fact, gone along with the contention that was made at that point of time by the lady who had, in fact, performed services and was supposed to receive a benefit, I believe, of part of a hog farm. And if that had been in writing, it would have been relieved by the statute of frauds. That particular case.
Well, the problem I have with your argument is you are confusing a contract that is in writing versus what is permitted in that contract under Ohio law, considering we don't have common law marriage, we don't have palimony. So I want to read a quote from the Court of Appeals and ask you to interpret this. The court quotes her deposition that says, "I thought what was of value was the fact we were sharing all sorts of things. He had my love. I shared my assets with him. We were living as a couple." And then the court said, under the facts of this case, we conclude that moving into the home with another and resuming a relationship can constitute sufficient to support, consideration sufficient to support a contract. How is that not finding love and affection the basis of that contract, whether it was in writing or oral?
It is part of the basis. I will agree with that. But it is not the sole basis. If you take a look at the contract itself and her comment, it's my assets. If you take a look at the first page of the contract,
assets,
you will say, and
bring
cash down payment.
And what did she bring in assets and cash?
Cash down payment. She already owned this house before these two got together and had a substantial amount of equity in it. And as the contract indicates, that there were substantial improvements made. So she brought in her assets. She brought in also love and affection. And again, I would suggest to this court that there is precedent in the Ohio Supreme Court, which is found in Emery versus Darling, 50 Ohio State, 166.
Would but she counsel have a claim for equitable restitution? Did she have a claim for equitable restitution for just getting her value back?
Yes, but I think that would be silly when you can ask for specific performance.
Did you plead in the alternative or just ask specific performance?
No,
But counsel, she was awarded the house, I believe, in her divorce, but she had trouble making, at least from the brief, she had trouble making the payments, and so Mr. Ormsby paid off the mortgage, the $310,000, and that's when he received a deed to the house. Isn't that correct?
No.
Okay, please correct.
That's an incorrect statement of facts, and if you take a look at the statement of facts as presented by the appellee in this particular case, she had received approximately, I believe, $100,000 that was still, you know, floating around. And there's no indication that the house payments hadn't been made. There was no indication that they weren't up to date. There's no indication that she needed his assistance whatsoever.
So he just voluntarily paid $310,000 to pay off the mortgage?
No, he didn't. He received his benefit. He received his benefit under the June contract. He received the benefit of becoming, he actually, for a bargain price of $300,000+, wound up getting the complete deed to this house, where there was actually no reservation of rights to her, there was no lien filed, there was no security given to her, there was no promise to pay back, there was nothing, until such time as these written contracts come out. He put it in writing. That's his contract. He drafted it. It's strictly construed. That's like the first day of contracts that you go into in class.
So, Counselor, are you saying that, I mean, the way I view the facts, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that for the sum of $310,000 that went to pay off the mortgage, she quit-claimed to him all of her interest in this property?
Every bit of it was gone.
And he filed that deed, and he owned the house.
Right, and she's out
and
in the
she
cold.
She was not entitled to any contribution or any repayment to her. There was no agreement for that at the time, correct?
Nothing.
Okay. So she wasn't entitled to anything.
You could look at it, the statute of frauds. Yeah, I just quit claim my house for less than value by a substantial amount. And yeah, I get nothing.
Counsel, are we referring to the June agreement? Because I thought that when the property was sold, he'd get his money back, and then she got the balance. So she would get the equity, assuming, of course, the property didn't lose considerable value. So I'm a little puzzled by your statement. Are we talking in absence of the June agreement or
timeline
with the June agreement?
Right. No, the timeline. Again, the first timeline is the deed is given. There's no agreements whatsoever. There's nothing. There's nothing in writing. Then you have the March agreement that comes out. Things go to the wrong place in a handbasket. And we then have the June agreement, which again is a free, voluntary act by competent people. Free and voluntary. And again, if you take a look at Emery versus Darling, if you want to eliminate every other part of consideration, which was all the equity that she had in the house, the use of the property, and again, the sharing of other assets, they continue to live together and make payments on whatever they do to live together. But again, Emery versus Darling, if you just get rid of everything else, love in society is not capable of being measured in money, and it is equal. It is sufficient consideration. It is sufficient consideration. Because in that, two ladies, sisters, I think, got together. You live with me. You take care of me. You do whatever else. You provide me with company. You know, I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to give you my property. And she put it in writing. She put it in writing.
Didn't she give the property to him without that? Because of his $310,000 payoff to the mortgage and then the quitclaim deed. That all happened first.
Correct.
Right? And
correct.
Then they enter into the subsequent writings, two separate writings, correct?
Correct.
All right. So she didn't give him the property. She didn't gift him the property, the quitclaim deed. He paid $310,000 and relieved her of that responsibility.
But what did she get back?
She didn't have to pay $310,000 to a mortgage company.
Right. So what? If she sold the house, she realizes, you know, equity above that. Where was that money? Where did that go? How did that disappear?
Well, that's all speculative at this point, whether there was any equity in the home. And then that was actually what could be construed as gratuitously put into writing, that he would pay it off, or excuse me, he would get his investment back, the $310,000, I think it was a figure of $324,000, and if it sold for anything more than that, she would get the excess. Is that the arrangement that they had?
That's the arrangement under the, I believe, the March agreement, yes. Okay. In essence, that's what that is. However, they novate that agreement. I don't care how you look at it, they novate it. It's free and voluntary, and again, the agreements, when you take a look at both of them, judges, you're going to see that they are, in fact, different. Here, there are recitals that she does have a cash down payment, that there is a recital that there's been an increase in value in the home. There are various recitals that exist in here. This agreement at no point of time is conditioned, by the way, upon marriage. There is nothing that says, you know, if this goes, you know, sour, you know, gee, I get it all back because it's all conditioned on us getting married. Again, the Court of Appeals appropriately found that this agreement provided for resolution if, in fact, there were difficulties that existed or came about between the parties.
One of the points made by opposing counsel was that she already had the right to be in the house based on the first writing. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that.
Okay, and then she left.
Correct.
And they had a falling out, and the relationship soured. They were no longer engaged, I guess, at that point.
In today's relationships, I don't know how the word I hear.
Well, I don't know either. But
girlfriend, boyfriend, that's all I hear anymore.
Okay, so then they had a period of time where they were at odds with one another. They executed another agreement and then reconciled. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, and
but
then after the reconciliation, there was the agreement that says I have to be 50% owner in this house in order for me to move back in.
That's right.
But there was no reason why she couldn't have moved back in without that agreement, except that that's what she wanted. But she was entitled to open up the front door, walk in, and sit in the living room if she wanted, wasn't she?
I'll take a look at that. You know, again, he's got the deed, so she's got some problems there. I don't think she's granted a leasehold, frankly. And if so, she's certainly one at sufferance, from what I could tell, almost. I mean,
if we were to find that the June contract was solely based on love and affection, her moving back into the house, and the March contract was voided in contemplation of signing the June contract. Does that put the March contract back into play?
I honestly don't know.
Because the March contract, you know, gives her equity back above and beyond what he paid. So
I can't tell. It probably would. Probably, again.
Is that argued or pled at all?
No, I don't believe so. Again, the judge only voided out the second contract. Apparently, the other one was still left in play because the issue was then to be set on whether or not there were damages and what was to be done with that contract. So obviously, the trial judge felt that would be back in play. I think you can't say that the second contract, in fact, is based solely on love and affection. Again, there are other recitals in there. And again, consideration doesn't have to be equal in a contract, and that's well-established law also. Again, you can bargain. I mean, if you allow this to go forward, and again, I'm not a good person on this part, but if you allow this to go forward, you're going to have these people making all sorts of promises to one another to get them to enter into romantic and other relationships.
That happens every day.
I understand. But if you don't put it in writing, it's not going to matter about land. But by golly, if you put it in writing, if you put it down, this is what I'm going to do, and you make it so that, in fact, by the way, this got filed. The second contract was, in fact, filed with the county recorder's office. The entire world is put on notice. This is my agreement. Now, by the way, I don't like you anymore. Too bad. You're out on the street, and I'm going to stick you with the first agreement. But the only way I got you back with me was having the second agreement signed up. There's something inherently unfair about that, and that's not just. That's not justice. You know, you're gonna say it, you live by it. Keep your word. Nothing further.
Thank you. Counsel, you've reserved a little over 3.5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, in this matter, it was not Mr. Armsey alone that drafted the contract. The evidence would bear out that Ms. Williams' brother was involved in producing the contract.
Also, the case of Emery versus Darling was decided, I believe, on an issue of equity. And in that case, the parties were sisters. The relationship was already formed. Here, we've got the Ninth District trying to say that a relationship itself, a romantic relationship, can form consideration for a contract. The question or the statement by opposing counsel that the June document was novated or novated the March document is absolutely incorrect because there was no consideration. The irony in this case is that the court below has essentially held that non-compensable services motivated by sentiment served as the consideration, the bargain for exchange in the formation of this contract. The question to the court is...
Is your position then that if we find the June contract not supported, that the March contract still is in play?
Yes, Your Honor. That was what was pled below in our complaint for a specific performance of the March.
She would still be entitled under the March contract to any of her assets or equity in this contract?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Over the $324,000 that was paid by Mr. Ormsby, absolutely. Under the Ninth District's rationale, Ms. Williams demanded that the March 2005 contract be changed so that she can receive an interest in real property worth $162,000 in exchange for non-compensable services. How much does one normally demand in exchange for non-compensable services motivated by sentiment?
Counsel, there's one thing I want to clear up, and I may be under a misperception here. You said that she had the right to go back into that, you know, to the, okay.
Absolutely.
In January of 2005, they canceled their wedding. March of 2005, their engagement ended when law enforcement officers removed Williams from the property pursuant to a restraining order. You think she still had the ability to walk into the
yes,
front
Your
door?
Yes, the restraining order was dropped, and she, by contract in the March agreement, she did not lose the right to actually be in the house. If she was to graciously vacate the guest bedroom and the guest bath for Mr. Ormsby to remain there.
When was the, would you repeat what you just said?
That the restraining order was dropped.
Okay, the restraining order was dropped in March?
I believe it was sometime after March. I would have to look at the record. I don't.
Well, no, it would have to be in May. They started to reconcile.
Yes.
When was she able to move in? When was she in that house?
I believe she moved back in the house pursuant to the June agreement. Is when she demanded the $162,000 interest in the house. She said she wasn't going to move back until she had that.
Okay. What did you just say about the guest bedroom and?
Yes, under the March agreement, she had the right to. They both had the right to be in the house. That she was to vacate the guest bedroom and the guest bathroom for Mr. Ormsby.
Okay.
In reversing the Ninth District, not only reached a wrong result, but set a dangerous precedent. It takes well-settled contract law down a new road in Ohio, binding parties to promises based on cohabitation resembles palimony, a cause of action Ohio has declined to acknowledge. To enforce a contract based on resuming a relationship is equivalent to enforcing a contract based on love and affection. The rationale of the Court of Appeals decision should not be the law in the state of Ohio. That decision must be reversed and the judgment of the trial court affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement and you will be notified of our decision.